All right, welcome to episode 88 of the At-Bat Podcast presented by War Media, where we give you our thoughts on the latest Chicago baseball news as well as take a trip around the league. I am Saul Rodriguez, along with my co-host Miles Porter, as well as Gabriel Wilkins, who you can see on his own podcast named The State of the Gave, available exclusively on Spotify. We also have Chris Pennant as well, as you can see him on the CHGO Sky Show, as well as the co-host of the Skyhook Podcast. How we doing, guys? How we doing, Miles?
Hey, doing good, man. Saw some great Cubs wins last week, and I actually saw a Sox win as well, despite the rough start we're off, you know, on the South side. Man, I'm just happy baseball's back, bro. So I'm doing good. Started my throwing routine. I'm getting ready for my season. And I feel happier when baseball is going on.
Oh my, that's an understatement, dude. Like, the thing with me is like I always watch all my shows and movies, dude. I'll watch those in the off season because for the most part, I'll sneak in a movie every now and then. Big movie guy, so like I'll sneak it in. But during baseball, man, there's always something to watch. Like I'm either watching the like condensed games or like press conferences. Like so, baseball, I'm in that. So I get you there. How are we doing, Gabe? How's everything, man?
I'm living, man. Life is good. I've been chilling in the boonies the last few days in Richard Park. Ain't been able to get out, but helping my father and my stepmama handle these, you know, stuff with this technology and all this shit. Then, you know, national championship came out here. Watch that. Just been living, watching some baseball as well. Mm-hmm. Definitely keeping up with the White Sox in spite of the, you know, lackluster offensive play, trying to see where they trying to go and how they trying to build. Been watching a little bit of Cub games and other baseball around the league as well. It's cool to see baseball back, but I know as, you know, the months ramp up and we get to the summer heat and the madness, we're going to be able to separate the men from the boys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's the thing, too, is like so many things have happened, like with baseball, whether it be good and bad. I mean, we got things coming up like Jackson Holliday's, you know, major league debut. And then we have countless injuries for the pitchers. So like we'll get into that and talk all about that. But Chris, how you doing, man? How are things going? I love the shirt, by the way.
Oh no, shout out to Connor Moore. I had to get one as soon as he announced it. I gotta watch back that women's soccer game last night because evidently a listener was going off. Mm-hmm. So it's gonna be some trips out to Bridgeview this summer because there ain't shit else going on the south side of Chicago right now for me to go check out. Bro, I was out in San Francisco for my great aunt's birthday, and I might be a Giants fan, man. It might be time, bro.
That's rough too, because a lot of free agents don't want to go to San Francisco right now with the way they carjacking people out there.
I don't even know.
I don't even want to live in Walnut Creek. You heard JD Martinez turned down the deal with the Giants to go to New York, and I'm like,
and he straight up said it too. I mean, he didn't say. Yeah, I don't think he said anything. Yeah,
the NBA All Star Game gonna be out there next year, and a lot of people are like, man, you know, I don't know. I'm like,
I'm saying right now,
Black History Month. Everybody want to come out and kick it. Everybody's like, no, I don't know now.
Them niggas soft, bro. Like, just ride public transit, ride a bike. Get your workout in before you get your workout in. Ain't nobody scared of no carjackers, nigga. Yeah. I'm dead ass. It's San Francisco. They really want to say is that they don't like seeing homeless people on the streets. That's what it is. And hey, you know what? You know what you do if you don't want to see homeless people on the streets? Get some universal basic income up in this motherfucker, bro. Like, that's all you need. That's all you need. It's an easy solution. Miles sitting over there like, okay, right, I can't laugh too loud at work.
You got all the executives walking by me. You're doing good. All right, doing good.
You said what?
He's gonna be like Miles. He's gonna be like Miles. Let me tell you something a little bit about homeless people. And then he's But speaking of you mentioned women's soccer, Chris. They're gonna actually. I don't know if you saw, but the Red Stars are gonna play a game at Wrigley. That's pretty cool. Another Swanson on Wrigley Field's grass would be pretty cool with Mallory Swanson. And yeah, yeah. And you know what's funny too is I've told a couple people, you know, working downtown, I actually walked past Alyssa Nair like twice. And it's just funny because it's one of those things where like you walk past somebody that she knows you know who she is. Yeah. and she probably was waiting for me to like go up, but I'm like, I'm good, I'll leave you alone. Like I'm just like, you know, look a little nod. But it was just funny because I'm just like, is that? Yeah, she's tall as hell. That's Alyssa Nair. Mm-hmm. You just know. You can just tell. So, but
I did that with CM Punk once. I was walking down Milwaukee. Yeah, way back my girlfriend at the time, and he was walking this tiny ass dog, and like we got level with him, and I looked, and I was like, it was the same thing. He saw the recognition. He kind of smiled, and it was nice then because then back then I actually liked CM Punk. Now I'll be like, hey bro, fuck you, like. Let me stop because this podcast is gonna get demonetized. Let's keep going.
The few cents of money,
we gotta get you that bread, man. That's disrespectful.
Hey, it was me that wanted all the smoke.
I don't know. I missed out.
but Chris, also another thing too, you mentioned with the wrestling. Like, dude, and I've said this before, like, surprisingly, I'm not really much into wrestling. My friends are, but like growing up, my mom's side of the family's all wrestling. And like, they have a bunch of wrestlers. Like my cousin's a pro wrestler in Mexico, but still to be honest, I feel left out. I'm not going to lie. That WrestleMania looked crazy. Like I watched some highlights of like the Undertaker coming and like, I don't even watch it. And it gave me goosebumps. Like watching like the Undertaker come out of nowhere with the music and all that. That was badass.
I think that whole match was crazy. You knew it was going to be crazy. They were going to pull out all the stops. So like anybody who came out for that match. Yeah. Like I'm halfway surprised Mick Foley didn't show up for that match. But like there was so much good stuff that weekend that happened. Like Snoop Dogg was involved in a couple things, and he was good. He was on commentary. Most of the matches were just good. They had their lower level NXT on Friday night at Wells Fargo. Most or all of those matches were good. It's a solid women's division where, if y'all remember when we were younger, it was a lot of just like we're showing skin and doing like 2 or 3 minute matches. Now they're doing away with that. Like they've got a lot of equity across the board. And as much as I hate Triple H as a character, he really cares about wrestling. I just really wish that they weren't breading up Saudi Arabia like that. That's really the sticking point, because otherwise they're making it a point to put on a good, well-rounded show. It was dope.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was so much there and so many people that I didn't expect. Like I saw like just a bunch of clips of it, and I saw like even like iShow Speed was there getting kicked over with
Randy Orton beat his ass.
Dude, that gif of that had me dying. Like I watched that like 20 times in a row, like him getting like kicked in the gut and his like fuck in the cap coming off of the freaking suit. That was hilarious.
that was amazing.
But
I never heard of that dude. And I was like, well, he did real good heel work right there, because I don't know this dude, but I hate him right now.
No, yeah, he is just like, I've only seen clips because he's like a streamer, and he just like is the most out of pocket dude like you'll ever find, and that was funny, that was funny. But we'll getting back into baseball. I mean, you know, we'll start off with the White Sox. Of course, we got our boys here, Chris and Gabe. So you know, obviously, as Miles said, not a great start for the Southsiders, but you know what? There's still a lot to talk about, and I think there's, you know, when it comes to, you know, injuries, when it comes to the way things, you know, guys have been playing, because there is, regardless of what people say, and I'm sure you guys, I'm sure Gabe will be the first to say as well, is that there's still some positives in there. I mean, you have, you know, Michael Kopech fitting well into his spot in the bullpen. But we'll start, unfortunately, with the bigger news, which is, you know, the three guys on the IL, Eloy, Robert Jr., and Yoan Moncada, who just went on the, or is going to be on the, they haven't announced it yet, but he's probably going to go on the IL, I'm assuming, right? Yeah, I don't think they announced it. But what have you guys thought? I mean, I know there's really not much to say necessarily on the way that the team has started when it comes to the record, but how have you guys felt about how the team has played? Because, look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it either. Like, I this whole offseason, people were like, man, the White Sox might be the worst team in baseball. And I was like, no, I don't think so. I mean, you guys forget the A's exist. And then I was like, you forget the, I mean, the Marlins are pretty damn bad. But the White Sox just keep surprising me with some of these offensive performances they're putting that like on. It's rough, but granted, injuries, I understand that. Granted, some of the pitching they've been facing, some of these guys are pitching well. Like the Royals, for example, are looking great. Their pitching rotation is looking really good right now. So what have you guys thought? We'll start with you, Gabe, overall in these first 11 games.
The failure to execute with runners in scoring position has been this team's Achilles heel. The pitching staff has kept them in more ball games than not, at least the starting rotation has.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels as though in order for the White Sox to win these days, that they have to play a perfect game from top to bottom. And if it isn't one thing, it's another. If my pitch is on point, my offense is not. If my offense is on point, my pitching is not. If my starters are on point, my bullpen is not. If my bullpen is, my starters are not. You know, it's just, it's a multitude of issues. And this team has to find a way to get in sync with one another, regardless of the lack of talent that is currently on this roster. Moreover, it doesn't help when you have your top three guys, or guys that you once looked at as cornerstone players, getting injured. And it forces fans, as well as media locally and nationally, to ask, why does this continue to happen? Is this roster snake bitten or what? Well, now you got to start looking at some of these players and asking, what are guys doing in the offseason to make sure that they're taking care of their bodies? Yeah, you know, guys work out, but it's a difference between working out and working out for the sport that you're playing in. And you heard Ozzie Guillen bring up that point on NBC Sports Chicago last night in the postgame show. Overall, though, I was impressed with what I saw yesterday to score five runs in the first. But then at the same time, it's kind of like, well, it's about damn time, because when you have an offense that's gotten shut out four times through your first 11 games, that's nothing to smile about or laugh at. And it's getting to the point where, as a fan, you know, everybody likes to make their jokes on Twitter to get by it or whatever. But like, if somebody that's really watching on a day-to-day basis, it's like, I'm trying to figure out who can I trust. I know I can trust Gary Crochet with the stuff that he's been showing, but I want to see more of the change-up feature. I know that I could trust Luis Robert Jr. when he was playing, but he's down now, and he may not be back to June. So who's going to step up? You know, Andrew Benintendi, you the $75 million man, you know, for working at bats. Yeah, you looked a little bit better since they slid you from the leadoff spot down to the five hole, but can you do that consistently? That's the thing with this team. And I want to see who the cornerstone guys are, who will cement themselves as cornerstone guys, because a lot of guys, let's be real, that's on this ball club right now, they're not going to be here within the next several months, if not to a year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they've even seen some people talk about, is it the training staff as well? I mean, this is something that's been going on, not just this year, but, I mean, you look at, you know, other teams like the Yankees. I mean, when they've had countless injuries, and they haven't stopped necessarily, but they've gotten a little better since they changed the whole training staff, have the Yankees. So in that aspect, you know, who knows there as well. But, yeah, there has been – like I said, or like you said, you know, with guys you can trust and see, they're kind of, you know, looking at different pieces and how they fit. But, you know, and with that, you know, comes great opportunity with certain guys. So that's why, you know, it's fun to see a guy like Kopech get the opportunity. And I know I was going to say too, and I think, I don't know if I've said this to you guys before, but I literally, like, I told my buddy when Kopech was in the system, I was like, I bet you Kopech is going to end up being like a reliever, and like, he's going to be one of the best closers in the game. And that was early. I think I said like 2020. So I was like really early on that, but like, I was like, hey, he could actually become an elite closer if this all comes together. And that'd be pretty cool. I mean, he obviously has the stuff for it, so hopefully, you know, it could happen. And
shout out Jordan Leisure too, because I gotta pitch him. They haven't utilized him enough out the bullpen. You saw him last night in a high leverage situation for the first time, put out two shutout innings, looked really fantastic out there doing his job. You know, if he needs to get more innings and continue to develop, maybe he could be a potential setup guy to Kopech, if not an eventual closer, once he gets his feet wet in the league. I really like what I've been seeing from him lately, not only on the minor league level, but in the pros thus far.
How about you, Chris? What have you thought so far about the start? And just again, the you know, the compiling injuries and all the stuff that's going on here.
I think when you put out certain chickens in the coop, that at some point they come back to you, to kind of paraphrase the phrase, and this is just the chickens coming home now. Like your one of your marquee acquisitions over the offseason, John Brebbia, is out. You know, just for emphasis, I'm going to say one of your marquee acquisitions over the offseason, John Brebbia, is out. Eloy Jimenez is out. Luis Robert Jr. is out. Yoan Moncada, who turned somewhat of a corner in my estimation, is out. And as Gabe said, Andrew Benintendi, who's got the highest contract in White Sox history, is hitting 167. He's slugging 190. This is a guy that you hoped was going to hit more than five home runs in a season last year. What did he do? He hit exactly five. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only so much you can control, but you know, who do you look to in the lineup? Gavin Sheets has found his footing, but he's not a top tier guy. He just isn't. They brought in Robbie Grossman, who was only 34, but he's been around so long, it feels like you're digging in the well. And Martin Maldonado, who people talked about was going to help this team so much, is batting under 100. Now, granted, if he's handling guys like Crochet and Fetty and helping them along, then yeah, you've done your job. But what do we hear about this team? They're going to be a more disciplined ball club. They're going to be more defense oriented. Well, they're 12th out of 15 teams in terms of errors. They have a nearly 3-1 strikeout to walk ratio batting wise. They've struck out 92 times against 32 walks, and a sixth of those walks are from Gavin Sheets. Mm-hmm. Where does it start? Where does the turnover start? You know, I think the most optimistic of Sox fans, and there's not really that many of us because we've dealt with this history for so long, would say this is when you're taking your medicine and you feel sick. This is the vaccine and you feel kind of crappy for a while and then it gets better. But I don't see it yet. I just don't see it with the makeup of this team. I don't see them pushing towards a future. Like I've said in the past on this show, I thought the Cubs lied to their fans that one year where they said, we don't have the money to compete. But either they realize what could happen, that they had to keep building off of their 2016 success, or they just were actually, that was part of the plan. And now what are they doing? They are in a position to compete. I don't see, with all the evidence at hand, that the White Sox are pushing down the road looking to compete in the near future. And part of that is because Chris Getz in December or January said, we will be competitive this year. This isn't a competitive team. This isn't even close to a competitive team.
It's not. And it's getting to the point where, as a White Sox fan myself, as long as Chris, I'm asking myself, should I start planning to take road trips to Charlotte or Birmingham so I can catch the next generation of White Sox players? Even though I'm not going to get as prospect crazy as I used to be several years ago when they were making trades for Yoan Moncada, Lucas Giolito, Eloy Jimenez, Dylan Cease, and the like. They went on the international market and got Luis Robert Jr. That was a special time. I remember when NBC Sports Chicago used to broadcast the Charlotte Knights games and was telling us this was going to be the next generation of White Sox players. The next way towards the championship. Now we back at square one all over again. And it brought me back to a quote that the former GM and Rick Hahn once said, the money will be spent. Well, I don't know when the money will be spent, but if I know one thing, just watching this ball club through the first 11 games, the money needs to be spent on building an offense up, an offense that's going to manufacture runs and help this pitching staff out. Because one thing I do know, I've seen Chris thus far to this point do more with less. I do like the fact that it's an inexpensive bullpen and it's an inexpensive pitching staff. But when you only got $40 million on the books next year, going into next offseason, you got to start spending this money. And you're going to have to accelerate this quickly. And as much as I'm still trying to figure Chris Getz out, I also know who he's working for, who he's working under. We all know as White Sox fans with Jerry Reinsdorf, he cut payroll. So when you cut payroll, it's hard for me to expect you to build a winner when you're not committing yourself fully to winning. The only thing that makes this messed up is that you told me that the AL Central was an easy division. And yeah, on paper, maybe it was. But to sit up here and not expect these other teams, such as Detroit, Kansas City, and Cleveland, Minnesota, not to get better, you know, with the talent that they're starting to generate and accumulate in their farm system, that's not thinking with a conscious mindset. Because over time, this division is going to get better. It's going to get a little bit tougher to win. And are you willing and prepared and able to grind it out? That remains to be seen.
Yeah, and that's always the question when it comes to a team that's, you know, rebuilding or looking to rebuilding. It's like, you know, when you know, at what point do you try to start winning or like spending money, I guess I should say, right? Is what at what point do you start doing certain things? Like, it's always kind of like this meter that nobody's really perfected as much as it seems like they have with teams like, you know, like the 2017 Astros, you know, with their minor league system, or like the Cubs with their young guys. But it's not a perfect system. And it's also a hard one to even, like, I know even some people have said that they don't really like the whole like rebuilding and waiting. Like, you know, it's not good for a business to like be down for like 4 or 5 years when it comes to like losing and all that. That's just what some people say, as much as you can argue that it's worth it. Cause as a fan perspective, like a guy that like watches their team every day, like, I don't know, there's something to be said. I mean, I'm still gonna be watching. So like, it maybe isn't that terrible for me, but I don't know. What were we gonna say?
I'll tell you why it's bad for business too, yeah. Especially going into 2025. Next year marks the 20th anniversary of the 2005 World Series Championship.
Oh yeah.
It marks the 25th anniversary of the 2000 AL Central Championship team. Fans want to come to the ballpark. You're losing fans. You got to give them something to come back to. You got to make some big acquisitions sooner rather than later. And you talking about trying to get a stadium in the South Loop? It's put up a shut-up time at this point. You know, and money talks, and bullshit walks a marathon. You know, so the fans have snuffed the BS at this point. They may not have done it with the Bulls, but they damn sure done it with the White Sox. You're the second team in the second city. So, you know, now it's time. Me personally, I'm not going nowhere. If anything, I'm actually kind of intrigued to see it now, because you sold me on a promise and you bought me back in, and now that promise was unkept. So now I'm trying to really see, what are you about? Because I don't see them moving. All that's smoke and mirrors to get me distracted from what the real issue is, and that's on the dime.
Yeah, no, I don't believe so either, necessarily that they're gonna move, but yeah, I mean there is a lot of stuff there that it is intriguing for sure how you know guys go about starting, and it's kind of like, you know, even, you know, to not just because I'm wearing a Bears hat, but like when it comes to the Bears, like at the beginning when Ryan Poles was doing certain things and people, it's like, just give it some time. I know that there's not a lot to go on when it comes to experience, or when it goes like to Bears history, or just, you know, like White Sox history when it comes to Getz, but it's like, at least give it a shot before you start, you know, cooking the dude alive. But this is the way I see it. So, Miles, what are your thoughts so far on the White Sox? I know, like, you know, they, you know, Gabe and Chris have basically, you know, there's no one that says it better than them when it comes to from their perspective. But from your perspective, what have you thought about the White Sox and their, you know, with the injuries and as well as the positives? Like, you know, they mentioned with Kopech and Leisure as well. What have you thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the words that comes to my mind is unbearable. Just in a sense where. And like I've said this on multiple occasions, where like I really, really feel for Sox fans when it comes to this, because we are talking about a product on the field that is just to say that they're not cutting it is an understatement. But I am very hopeful when I look at pitchers like Crochet and Kopech, who are going out there and just absolutely shoving. My girlfriend and I were at the game last week when Crochet just dismantled the Braves, and it was so fun to watch, overpowering dudes. And you know, it's those little things where it's just, okay, if I'm a diehard Sox fan, this is something that's going to keep me engaged. I don't even know, man. It's unfortunate you got Johan down, Eloy and Luis, the, the White Sox big three all going down, and like Gabe alluded to, you got your $70 million man who's hitting below 200. That's not going to cut it. And I think for the most part, what I'm hoping for the White Sox, even going forward for next year, is just give these fans something to hold on to feel good about. I don't like the whole blowing the smoke up these fans. It's just not fair. It's not fair to the fans. I think every player that goes out there wants to perform well. They all want to win. Unfortunately, they're not in the position to win. These aren't players that are going to get you a lot of wins during a season. Yeah, it's unfortunate, and I'd be pissed off, especially in a division right now that, in my opinion, is still up for grabs. But like Gabe said, it's not going to be that way in a few years. It's going to get very, very competitive. We're seeing that with the NL Central becoming extremely competitive now, like we alluded to in the past. I'm hoping for the White Sox. They're right there in the next 2, 3 years in terms of when that division gets better, and give these fans something to hold on to, and stop lying to these fans. Stop. It's not as, I don't know. It's unfortunate. The way when they beat the Braves last week, I thought they won a playoff game.
It felt
It
like
was just, man, bro. Like, I just
it
felt,
felt like
oh man.
did you experience how hard it was just to watch? Because even down to the last out, Atlanta made it a game, and that's
Yes.
always been the White Sox way the last 3 years. It's never been a win where fans could just be like, hey, it's a 7-run lead. Top of the ninth, we
Yeah.
were doing after the game. It's not
Yeah.
that way when you watch White Sox baseball right now. And it hasn't been like that since 2021. And I think that's why a lot of fans are so upset, because in 2021, I didn't go to a playoff game, but I had a chance to. And I remember I told my grandma, she's like, why you didn't go? I said, because they're going to be there next year. Taught me not to take it for granted. And I should have never said that, knowing my history with that team as a fan. But I learned a lot of valuable lessons from this rebuild as a fan, and the way I watch is different. I watch the minor leagues now more than I ever have before, and I'm closely tracking guys on a day-by-day basis. And I'm not trying to hype up guys to tell you that Sammy Zavala is the next Julio Rodriguez because his numbers may say it or whatever, but I am watching these guys on the farm. And what I've seen in Double A Birmingham has been cool to watch. And that might have to be the way for some diehard White Sox fans to get through this rebuild. Watch the guys that's going to be a part of the future. Because some of these guys that you're watching up at the big league level right now, they're not going to be it. And some of these younger guys are going to have to get more reps and playing time, like Corey Lee and guys like Melanin. So you got to see what some of these guys are made of. Because if they're not ready, you got to ship them off and get talent that's able to help you in the now and the immediate future.
I agree. Like, I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think Torii Lee's start has been nice to see. As like at the very least, he looks good. So can you get him to split, say, 60-40 time with Martin Maldonado, instead of
Absolutely.
sending Maldonado out there every 8 days just to not hit at all? But when you're talking about the guys on the farm, we've done this. We've done this
Yes.
dance. We've done this dance. And they're like, can you be confident that once they get to the majors, everything isn't going to be shaken up because of some Bears-like transition of the coaching staff or some silly ideas that is going to take them out of what they do well? Like, we saw Eloy play 100-plus games and hit very well against teams. We've seen Luis Robert play a number of games and hit very well against teams. I remember people talking about, why did you change this guy's stance in order for him to hit for contact when he is a very good power hitter on the pull side? Like, why are you taking these guys out of their comfort zone when their comfort zone enables them to be all-stars? That's what gets on my nerves, because you build the organization from the top down, right?
True.
But in the farm system, you have these guys succeeding. So what happens when they get to the major league level? Why does some switch flip where they get all screwed up? I can acknowledge that being 2-9 is not going to make guys want to come up, get up, and go to the ballpark even early in the season. And so the mood in the clubhouse is probably just not good enough for everybody to be like trying to go run through a wall every day.
You know it.
but I don't trust the I don't trust this organization right now to make good on any kind of promises. And so, Gabe, when you said like you don't think they're gonna move, you think that's smoke and mirrors, I can't trust it. I don't know. Like Jerry's done that dance before too. And it took a stalled clock to keep them in Chicago, not even just at 35th Street. So what's to say that in this age where I could play baseball on my phone if I wanted, that he's not just going to say, you know what, fuck it. We can go down to Nashville and get the bachelorette parties, or we could go down to Charlotte. We could just put the team in Charlotte and have everybody go on those winding ass roads to the, you know, what is to say that he won't? I don't know.
But at the age of 87, to be making moves like that when you're on the back nine and you know you got another team in this city, because let him move the White Sox up out of here. I could tell you right now, I'm not going to Madison Street. And I know it'd be some other folks that should probably do the same thing. Like, I don't care about them six banners no more. You know, and I was born in the 90s. That don't hold no weight with me anymore at this point. Like, that may hold weight with all the older guys, but, like, at some point, like, you done made enough money in this city. And to sit up here and tell me you're going to lead a third largest market, even though you may not have the lion's share of it, the share that you have is much bigger and more vital than what you would get in that. That's all I'm saying. I'm not never going to rule it out completely, but that's just how I feel about it, you know? Like, I'm not telling White Sox fans, oh, trust in the development, especially when no development on the player development side has been shown. I can't tell White Sox fans what to trust. All I'm saying, I'm just looking, and I'm paying very close attention from a top-down point of view and standpoint. That's all I really can do, and I'm trying to see who's going to show me. Because if they don't show me, then I got something to point to.
Yeah, and you know what, you guys, and you mentioned it, as you mentioned, the minor league system, and you're maybe taking trips to Charlotte and all that, gave it kind of leads me to what I was going to ask you guys too, as well as Ozzy mentioned too on the show the other day, talking about how they should bring up Colson. They should bring Colson up so he can suffer up here. That's what he said, quote, suffer up here. Now, and I kind of want to get you guys' opinion, because like, I understand that there's a negative, to that, right? There's, you know, a player can get discouraged, you know, playing with a team that's not having success. But is there any sense, is there anything that, you know, any positive from bringing up a kid like that in an environment like this? The only reason I ask that is because he faces major league pitching every day. And with a guy like Colson Montgomery, he does look like he's the real deal. But I do understand there's this double-edged sword. But like, what are your exact thoughts on like on Ozzy's comments and saying like, you know, maybe, you know, bring a guy up like Colson at this stage of his minor league career?
If I'm Chris, I ain't doing it. Not right now. Not right now. I don't need this kid getting vilified by his fan base. I got to protect that kid. And not only that would be the reason. The White Sox have had a history of rushing prospects up. We did it with Gordon Beckham. We did it with Andrew Vaughn. We did it here with Joe Creed. If you want to know the truth, I was inside the doors when they did it with Joe Creed. And I knew a lot of people that wasn't for that. But they pushed him up. And, you know, he was a prize prospect in the White Sox organization. And he came up at a rather young age. Like, if he is ready to go by July 1st, okay, cool. If you want to push it into September, I'm fine with it. But I don't want this kid coming up here right now, especially when he is going to be asked to be the savior of this ball club. It's a lot riding on this kid from the moment he arrives, no matter what. But to do it right now with the start that this ball club has gotten off to, that would be a tough spot to put that young man. I think he's shown and displayed a confidence that he would be able to handle it. But still, I just wouldn't do that for the sake of the kid. And to show this fan base, if I'm the general manager of the White Sox, if I was in Chris Gayle's shoes, that I am different, as he stated that he was when he got announced, you know, as the GM of the ball club, and they had the press conference for him, the opening press conference for him last summer.
Yeah, no, I definitely see where you're coming from, Gabe, because I know, like I said, there's I probably, when you break it down, there's way more negatives when it comes to this situation, like bringing up a kid in this environment. So And from fan bases, you know, like all over Chicago, I definitely understand what you're saying about them vilifying this kid and the way that they portray certain guys and the way that they just assume on guys without even, you know, not even knowing them a little, even a little bit before they, you know, they even seen them play. But Chris, what about you? What are your thoughts on that? That, you know, on Ozzie's comments of bringing up, you know, Colson up or just any, you know, any of the guys that they have up there. Cause obviously, like, you know, we mentioned Noah Schultz, Drew Thorpe, all those guys that are, you know, going to be up, you know, and hopefully delivering for the Sox sometime in the near future. But what are your thoughts on that overall?
Ozzie might've been playing that one Metal Gear Solid game with that quote. That's the only thing I could really think of. So why are we here? Just to suffer. That's how Sox fans feel right now. You know, like, don't let that. How old is Colson Montgomery, Gabe? Is he 24?
I want to say about 23.
He's 22.
No, don't.
Yeah.
Don't let,
yeah. Yeah. Young
don't, let that, don't let that kid get older than he has to right now. Don't let him put those years, extra years on his head already. Like, bringing that man up right now when Sox fans are the most pissed off that they have been probably since 2012. When the team is just absolute ass water, when the organization is in a quandary of what to do with itself, don't bring that man up here. Let him stay out in Birmingham, where it's warm, where he can go watch, he can go drive to Alabama and watch football if he feels like it or something like that. Just don't do that. Like, there's no point.
He's gonna be up here by the end of the summer. I don't have no doubt in my mind, but I do think Drew Thorpe needs to be the first guy up here. If he continues to pitch at the level that he's been pitching, and then Nick Nastrini, and I think he's going to be one of the last guys, but at least for the 2024 crop of guys to come up.
But just mainly, like, Montgomery is not going to save your season. He's not going to save this season. He's not going to save next season. I don't think he is a transformative guy on the level of, say, a Harper or Strasburg or Acuna to save any team's season. To put asses in the seats on a consistent basis, not in this era currently of Major League Baseball. He's a good ball player who's developed. Let him be a good ball player and continue to develop in the minors the way that you're supposed to do. Get something right. The organization just needs to get that right. If you bring him up, and I would be cool with August, as much as I've talked about kicking the can down the road, and I'm not sure, that would at least show me that they have a semblance of sanity in terms of a plan. Like, we are not going to take this kid, unfinished product, and bring them up to the major league level to see guys who are deliberately trying to put 5,000 RPM spin rates on their fastball every night. Don't do that yet. It's not the time yet. That's all.
No, I agree with you, Chris. I definitely see him coming up. I wouldn't be shocked if he came up 1st of July, but, like, definitely not right now within the first 3 months of the season. I'm not with that right now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I trust me. I definitely see where you guys are coming from. I mean, you guys put it better than just bringing him up here and it's true, Gabe, and you mentioned he will be up here sooner rather than later when it comes to this season and all that. But Drew Thorpe is a guy that I do want to see. He's having good, you know, success early on here, season's young, but hopefully we see him. But Miles, as from a player's perspective, obviously you're still playing baseball right now. How do you feel about, like, if you were to come up from in a team and join a team where, like, the, you know, the environment from a fan base perspective, and there's a lot of losing, like, how does that affect like a player in general? How do you see Colson Montgomery's situation with the White Sox?
You know, I think it depends on the player specifically. I know for me, because I'd be so invested into everything already. I'd be very invested into the state of my teammates, invested in the state of the fans. You know, I would definitely feel that pressure. I would definitely kind of feel the sort of like the sourness coming on, going on around the organization, around the stadium. It's really not the best environment to come up in if we're talking specifically about the White Sox. Now, we've seen teams who have, you know, maybe they're in the rebuilding stages and they've called up players and there is like a lot of optimistic. There's a lot of optimism surrounding that player. You know, if I'm coming up on the White Sox, I'm probably going to be very informed on what's going on. And so, you know, I would feel great about getting called to the big leagues. I'd be very excited, but I would also be a little bit nervous about kind of the unknown in terms of what is the first half of my career going to be like? Am I gonna stay here? Is this team gonna deal me in the next 3, 4 years if things don't go well? Is the fan base gonna blame me? Who am I gonna let down? There's already so much pressure in terms of you don't want to be another one of these players that were brought up by this organization and hey, this didn't work out and now I got to deal with the backlash or I got to feel guilty. There would be so many things going through my head. I would just do my best to go out there and play baseball and make as good of an impact as I can. And I think that's what a lot of these young guys are going to try to do. Obviously, the White Sox are a little bit of a different case. Same thing with the Athletics right now. I wouldn't be surprised if there is a little bit of kind of like a spoiled feeling towards it in terms of like, I'm very thankful to be here, but I'm also very aware of the scenario that's going on right now. So that would be me. That would be me. I'll just go out there and try to kick butt every single day.
Hope you got a great PR team. Because in a city like
Yes.
Chicago, you need it. With fan base like in this city that's looking for a winner instantaneously, you need it. And it is very important in this city. I don't care who you are, politician, athlete, whatever. It's very important to say the right things because when you don't, people remember you and they do not forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an understatement with the Chicago with Chicago. I mean, just all you have to look at too, if you're an outsider looking in, is just look at, the type of pre-hate that Caleb Williams is getting from all
Man.
over social media. Because
Ooh,
that I
yeah.
don't think even for a fan base like the Bears or fan or Chicago fan base, even that seems a little unprecedented. Like that type that level is pretty crazy to me. But
Yeah.
yeah, and it is rough, and I hope that whenever Colson comes up, he's able to have the right people around it, because like how Gabe said, have a good PR team and have that
Yeah.
help him out, because this is what the city of Chicago hopes is one of the next stars
Good
of the
family and
sport.
friend
So
support as well.
exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. That's
Yeah.
a first. That's really a must to have as any athlete.
Yeah.
I tell people that all the
Yeah.
time.
100%. Now I know Miles does have to get out of here soon, so we'll get shipped over to the Cubs to get his thoughts. Of course, the Cubs are 7-4 to start the season. There's been, the Cubs have had their share of injuries when it comes to Steele, Tyone, now Merriweather. He's shut down for at least 8 weeks, so that's unfortunate. But of course, overall, it's been, positive when it comes to some of the games. I know we're recording this on Wednesday the 10th. Monday we've already flushed down the toilet, don't you know with the Padres comeback. Of course the Cubs were up in that game, eight nothing, and the Padres came back, but luckily the Cubs bounced back and won the game on Tuesday 5-1. But Miles, what has been your thoughts, whether it be just anything on the Cubs, whether it be the injuries, the guys stepping up like Bent Brown, who's pitching well. A lot of the talk has been Jose Cuas, and like, should he like sent him down to AAA, which of course people overreacting over a couple appearances. I will say this, I'll say one thing on Jose Cuas is that we know he has the stuff, and I've heard multiple people, this isn't just me saying this, that even when he came over from Kansas City, and I know Gabe mentioned it when the trade happened last year, but like, he was never a finished product, and he's not a finished product now. And he has great stuff that we know of, so I think people got to chill out a little bit on Jose Cuas. And like when it comes to a team that is searching for bullpen arms, and getting guys in each role, I mean, this is just like it's classic, early Cubs fans, and like, or Cubs, kind of jump, on the edge of the mountain early on the season. Like it's not that serious. But and then also guys like Christopher Morel, who are going off. I mean, he hit a grand slam. He's got three home runs, and the guys not being talked about enough. Also, I will say, as well as Ian Happ. I mean, this dude's like, he wakes up and he's on first base. Like this dude's got 14 hits, 9 walks. He's got a .434 on base percentage. Even like a guy like Mike Talkman also as well. Like that dude has 8 walks and 14 at bats this year. So,
Shout
what has
out
been?
Bradley, baby.
Yeah.
I didn't know you went to
Yeah.
Bradley. Yes,
Yeah.
sir.
The Palatine Pounder, also a former Bradley. What are they called, Chris? What
The
are they?
Braves, man. The
The
Bradley
Braves?
Braves.
Okay. But Miles, what has been your thoughts overall on this start from the Cubs?
Very optimistic, and I'm very happy just in terms of how great we're working these at bats. There's really not a lot of chasing going on. Specifically, I kind of want to highlight Christopher Morel, who I think has just made incredible strides this year. I love that he's getting the opportunity. And when I'm talking about incredible strides, I'm talking specifically about the offense. I know that there's questions about the defense and him at third base right now. I think that'll work itself out in terms of he'll be the DH spot or Magical, whatever. But I'm really just loving how this team is really coming into its own right now. And Seiya Suzuki, I mean, dude, are you kidding me right now? He is just on fire from opening day all the way to now. Seiya, and I think what he had another 2 hits last night. Just great. It's
Three,
just
actually.
great. It's three, yeah. And so, dude, I love it. I'm loving every second of it. The resilience of this ball club. Yeah, we got punched them out the other day, and then they came back and they handled their business last night. And so I think for me, I guess what we're going to talk about, when it comes to the pitching, this is kind of the point that I made last week. Yes, it's early. I hear the frustrations of a lot of Cubs fans, even though I think some of you are dramatic as hell.
Can't help.
they can't help it. With Jose Kwas, it's been a little bit rough, but also, I think Hector Neris has also gotten off to a rough start, and Yancy Almonte has also gotten off to a rough start as well. But I think we're gonna figure it out. I really believe in these guys, especially Hector Neris. I think his resume kind of speaks for itself. With Jose Kwas, if we're still struggling and we can't get the ERA down to at least like 6 or 5 by the time late May comes around, then all right. Then I think we consider moving some pieces around and maybe giving Carl Edwards a shot. If I'm not mistaken, didn't they like sign him again the other day?
Yeah, they did.
I would just love to see him back though, because I love you some Carl Edwards Jr. So overall, very, very proud of this ball club. I think the schedule is kind of weird that we're not facing anyone from the NL Central until May. But I am very pleased with just with how we were playing as a whole, how we're working at bats. We saw it in the Dodgers series, man. Really, really making these pitchers work. That just says a lot about this ball club. And I say this every year. I think we're gonna be good, and I think that it's gonna be very interesting to see how we address some of the issues that are being brought up right now by the deadline. I think that is gonna be very important. The Brewers are off to a start that I wasn't ready for, particularly. I kind of thought that this was going to sort of be the Cubs Cardinals, but the Brewers have gotten off to a pretty good start. The Pirates got off to a hot start as well. Overall, a lot of good things to look forward to for this ball club this year. But I think the last point I want to make before I get out of here is I think Michael Busch has also made a name for himself.
Oh, yeah.
I've been vouching for this guy pretty heavy since he's come over here. Yes. Once again, we're gonna see early season struggles from some of these guys. But Michael Busch has done great. Nicky Madrigal has done great defensively. And whenever we got to get Morel out of the game for whatever the reason is, just for that late game defense, it's great. I'm super proud of this team. I cannot wait to see how we develop more as the year goes on. And so, yeah, go Cubs, go. Had a lot of fun seeing the boys last week, and looking forward to seeing more games this year.
Yeah, me and Miles were at that disgustingly wet and nasty game against the Rockies, both literally and figuratively, dude. Because
Dude,
that game, like,
did you see Miguel Amaya playing catch with the snow coming down before the game started?
yeah,
Like,
dude,
man, these
like
boys are ready.
the White Sox had I guaranteed right field there was a snowman on like that somebody made a snowman on the field before the game. But yeah, no, that was crazy. I mean, the Rockies. We're down 8-2. They came back to make it 8-7, and or 8-8, I should say. And the Cubs ended up coming out with the win. But yeah, no, yeah. And I will say too, another thing is that with the bullpen is that I think what people don't realize too is that going into the season, the Jed's mission, as you can tell, it's very plain and obvious, is that they're gonna see if they can ride it out with this bullpen until a deadline, and then go out there and get a guy. Like, I'm not saying this is the guy they're going to get, but the type of quality a guy like a Class A or something like that, in general, like got an elite closer or an elite reliever. Again, easier said than actually done. It is going to be interesting to see what happens with guys like Quas and being able to fill in spot for like Merriweather, who was very important to this bullpen. And we're going to see how important he was now that he's going to be gone for a couple months. So that's the one thing that I was thinking about. But yeah, and I will say too, great series win over the Dodgers. I got one of my buddies who's a diehard Sox fan was saying the Cubs didn't beat them. It was the weather. So, I mean, it is one of those things where I'm sure the weather did help out in that, but it was cool to see Shota Imanaga.
It didn't bother Shohei during that series.
I know, right? Yeah, exactly. Dude, he, like, that one-handed home run to like, the right field corner was crazy. So, yeah, and, but the thing is, though, is that just seeing that Dodgers team just shows you how annoying, like, they are. Like, it's one thing when you see them facing another team, but when they're facing your team, it's like, dude, when does it stop? Like, just, like, lay down. Like, they don't. Yeah.
Freddie Freeman has an off day. That's fine. Teoscar Hernandez, we'll just go 3-for-4. Okay. Amazing. It doesn't stop.
100%.
Even when I'm rooting against a team like the Dodgers. You sit on the edge of your seat every time, and to me, that's what baseball is all about. That's kind of reminds me of when the White Sox was playing Houston. You know, you could never sit there how easily, knowing the heart of that order.
Yeah, exactly, and this is the thing. Like, I love watching the Dodgers play, just not when they're playing the Cubs, and that's like it's just they're relentless, and even like now they're playing the Twins. I mean, Max Muncy just hit a shot into right center for a home run. So like it doesn't matter. They're just an endless lineup. But Gabe, what has been your thoughts overall? I know you said you caught some Cubs games over the past week. What have you thought about the Cubs start, as well as, you know, their injuries and how they're dealing with this bullpen? Because as I mentioned before, you guys saw Quas even before he was traded over to the Cubs when he was on the Royals. So what have you thought about his struggles overall as well?
I mean, overall, it's rough. I like the way that they're starting as a team, though, right now. I mean, to take 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers, even though it was an early season series and the weather wasn't what it will be, you know, in the summer months, you take advantage of that. And they did. And that was a big statement series, I felt like, in a good measuring stick of barometer to see where they at early in the season. You saw Cody Bellinger, you know, taking the lefty deep. That's what you like to see. And that offense has been playing and clicking on all cylinders. The thing that's concerning, though, when it comes to taking that next step as a team is when you see your team blowing 8-run leads. And with the bullpen being at the level that they are right now and not performing up to par, I don't put the struggle solely on Quas. I put it on everybody in that bullpen. Guys got to step up. I know Jed said that he wants to wait until the trade deadline, but I always felt like he was playing with fire when he did that. And I don't know if they necessarily need an elite-level closer as much as they may need an elite-level setup, man. You know, because Al's alive for the most part, when I've watched him pitch, he's done his job. You know, he's been able to hold the 4 down for them. I just think that down the stretch, it's going to come down to pitching with him. The starting of the young arms, you saw Ben Brown give him a hell of an outing last night. Jordan Wicks pitched rather well against the Dodgers in Game 2. I like what I'm seeing from those guys, and I know they're going to have some other guys to come, like Kay Horton and the like, but they got to get their bullpen right if they really, really want to take that next step, in my opinion. But I like what I've seen from Morel. They really should be going for a sweep right now against the Padres, if you ask me. Yeah. But nonetheless, you know, they playing good ball right now. But in that division, with the talent that's in Pittsburgh, and that talent that's in Cincinnati is not going to be easy. So it's good that they're getting off to a good start, because the going's going to get tough when they start facing these central opponents coming.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about, you know, people talk smack about the Central in general, not only just the National League or the AL Central, but some of these teams in both the AL and National League Central making the division look really good right now. I mean, you got from the NL Central side, I mean, the Pirates are 9-3, the Brewers are 7-3, like – everyone in the NL Central is either at 500 or above 500. Of course, in the Central, in the AL Central, just the Twins and Sox, but literally the Tigers, Royals, Guardians, all those teams are a few games over 500. So, yeah, they're playing well, and you're right, Gabe. It is important to start off strong. And that Pirates team, I mean, they're playing good baseball. Literally, the only thing that's been inconsistent with them has been the closing spot for them, David Bednar. But I'm personally not worried about that because I know people have been talking about David Bednar. It's like, I saw his teammates stand up for him yesterday.
That was rough for me to see, even as a fan. Because that dude cares about Pittsburgh. And just following the story or whatnot, I have him on my fantasy team, actually. And I kind of But you know, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll be fine. I mean, with guys like that, I mean, he is an elite closer. Like that guy, I wouldn't be worried one bit. And you mentioned with Azulay, I think if anything, I'm by no means like saying like don't put this guy as a closer or whatever it is. But I feel like ultimately, I feel like he might be better off as a setup man. I think that's why I see a closer. But I'm not mad at him being our closer. Like, I'm not. Some people are saying, oh, man, he's not a closer. Like, whatever. It's like, dude, we really have only seen him as a closer for, like, technically a handful of months, even that. So still give him a chance. And we'll see how good of a closer I think he is by, like, July or August. So, Chris, what has been your thoughts as well on the Cubs start and just, you know, overall their situation right now?
I think they're in a good spot. I know I said the same thing the last time I came around, but I think they're in a good spot. The hitting is doing okay. They're in games that you wouldn't expect a team, even this early on. I don't think they're playing over their heads offensively. You could ask more from the relievers. Jose, the interesting thing about Jose Kwas is that he wasn't that good with Kansas City, where they were building a pretty solid pitching staff. And so then you bring him into the Cubs, and I don't know if they saw something in him that they expected to turn around coming to a better team, but I don't think you lose much if you either send Jose Kwas down or try and flip him for something, because we still have I like Azulay closing games. I do. I think that he's not proven himself to be elite yet, but I don't think that he is a flash in the pan just based on his numbers. Like his hard hit percentage is good. His exit velo is good. The one thing I think is down is his ground ball to fly ball ratio isn't as good as it was last year. And I personally like closers who get ground balls rather than try to strike everybody out, because I think you leave pitches up that way. Mm-hmm. I like Azulay in the closer spot. I think he'll do fine. And so I think that the Cubs are, one, drawing people to the ballpark. Two, they're giving them a reason to stick around. You know, in my heart of hearts, I wish it was not the case, but they're a quality ball club. I think anybody, like Miles said, if you're going a little nuts right now, just get some Sanka, stop drinking the energy drinks, cool out. Cool out. It's early. It's early April. I was watching wrestling. Jim Ross came up and got some throwback non-caffeinated drink references up in there, but it's April 10th for real though.
Yeah,
I think everybody with the quick takes and MLB Network, everything's coming at you all the time. Yeah, sometimes people forget it's a 6 month season. You have 6 months to this.
Oh,
relax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna read off. Yeah, and by the way, one of these episodes, I'm gonna read off some of the stuff that I'm seeing in this group chat and some of the coach fans are saying.
Please,
I'm like, homie, you need to relax, bro. We're winning. Like, we're good. Like, we're fine. We're not even like. Are you? I don't know. It's exactly. Crazy, man. There are some organizations that I understand, and for us, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, one of the most healthy organizations in baseball. It's crazy.
Don't tell them that, you know, everybody got that all or nothing complex, man. I tell yes. them instant gratification syndrome. That's the new epidemic.
Yep.
Well, it's a lot, man. There's too much of that going on where you can pick something up and get what you want. Streaming, phones, tablets. That's why I really like I always tell people, like, if you want to really get into baseball, turn the radio on. That's what you need.
Yeah.
Because then you get a full experience that you have to engage with, and somebody's not just giving you something to satisfy the dopamine receptors in your brain.
Pat Hughes, you're a legend.
Baseball on the radio is like digging, is like grilling a steak for yourself after having marinated it for a couple of hours and then sitting down to eat it. You take your time with it. That's what's good about baseball. You get to take your time, really taking all that in. If you get a bad steak like the White Sox, then you're like, at least I have a steak, I guess.
Chris, I'm gonna need to quote that later on. I'm gonna need you to write that down and send it to me.
Bro, I got you. I got you. I'm gonna send you, I'm gonna hit you up on Instagram.
You got to put that on a t-shirt right there.
Exactly.
And we'll get into the rest of Major League Baseball now. And of course, like I mentioned, Jackson Holliday has finally been called up. I mean, this dude, it feels like just yesterday that he was drafted, to be honest. And now he's going to be in the big leagues. And I mean, he's been killing it at every level. So it's deservedly so. But they're playing the Red Sox or the Orioles. So it just makes the rich richer. And I want to get you guys' thoughts on what you can expect from a guy like Jackson Holliday. I know, Gabe, you love watching those minor league games and watching those minor league clips. So it's like, what do you think about a guy like Jackson Holliday now coming up, and what kind of impact he's going to have with this Orioles team? Because, I mean, we know he is as an elite prospect as we may have ever seen, right?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I hate to say it makes me feel old seeing him watching his father when I was a teenager in high school, it's kind of cool. You know, you see the clips of when he was a young kid hitting the ball at Coors Field, you know, tossing it around, and Buster Olney saying that Matt Holliday's son is going to be a future all-star year before he got drafted. And now you see him coming up and whatnot, playing on a red-hot Norfolk Triple A team that might be one of the best Triple A teams I've ever seen. And I'm not bullshitting when I say it. Because they put up like 26 runs last weekend. But in one game, and Hester Kirst that had 10 RBIs. It was in the barn box in Charlotte. And I caught that game. And it's something to see with Jackson. I like that he's mature. You can tell that he's the son of a pro by the way he goes about his at bats and conducts his business. Not only just on the field, but off the field, you know, and it just goes to show you how when you in that life and you about that life, you can, you know, manifest, you turn your dream into reality. So I'm excited to see what he's going to bring to this Baltimore Orioles club. Not going to be a lot of pressure on him to perform right away, but anything he gives him is a bonus. And he's winning the number 7, which is a divine number, you know, so I hope that, you know, he does well and they really are ushering him in the right way because they haven't issued that number out since Cal Ripken's father, Billy Ripken, Cal Ripken Sr. rather, was the manager of the Orioles franchise. So I'm excited to see what he does in it.
Yeah, it's cool seeing the clips of him. And yeah, you're right, Gabe. It does make you feel, I mean, all these guys, I mean, like you're seeing just the fact that, you know, you've seen guys like Fernando Tatis Jr. who you saw a little bit of his dad play, like, you know, now we've seen, I mean, Matt Holliday, I saw plenty of Matt Holliday. So that definitely makes me feel real old. And, but yeah, I'm excited to see what he does. Cause that, just seeing his stance is like his presence in the box and his bat speed is pretty intimidating. And I'm really excited. And that's the crazy part, Gabe, that you mentioned is that he's got no pressure on him because that lineup's already stacked. And you know, that's the part I think is going to make it an easy transition. So we'll see what happens. But Chris, what's your thoughts on Jackson Holliday's debut?
It's wild to me that Matt Holliday's son is 20 because I swear he was just playing, bro. What? Like, shouldn't his son be 12, bro? Come on. That makes me feel hella old. Like, I don't, you know what? Here, that's my stance. I'm mad that this kid is getting called up because he should be in eighth grade. That's why, that's my stance. Like, I'm very upset. No, I think it is very cool. The Orioles have been in such a like wilderness other than that one year when they made the ALCS for so long. It was like the Tony Tarasco, what was the kid's name that reached over the wall and got the home run out of the
Jeffrey Meyer.
Yep, it's like ever since Jeffrey Meyer, it was like the Orioles were like stuck. And Peter Angelos didn't know how to do right. And so he finally let go of the purse strings and then just sold the team. So they've got that on their side. They have brought in all these good prospects. They finally figured out how to develop pitching. And it culminated last year in their first real breath of fresh air in decades. So them being able to not only have the number one prospect, but call him up in a time like where both of you say, where Gabe said, he is not being looked at to save the franchise, save the season. Because you have Adley Rutschman, you have Gunnar Henderson, you have these guys who are already hitting. I love that they kept Anthony Santander there when a lot of people probably would have said trade him to get a return. But you have a guy like that who can hit home runs and be a sleeper late in your lineup. And so now all this dude has to do is get his growing pains out of the way. That's all he has to do. He's not going to be looked at to be a superstar out of the box. I think the Baltimore media is not the same as say New York or Chicago, but they want winners for sure. But I think the way that the Orioles are, they have garnered enough social capital that my man has time to find his footing. So it's really good. But still, Matt Holliday, bro. Like, how old are you, bro? Like, I don't. I'm upset. I'm upset about that. That's it. That's the
You know,
one
the
thing I'm upset
baseball
about.
players be getting married young.
I know, man. Like, y'all need to be like Jeter, Joe. Like, wait till you
Yeah.
retire. Like,
The
see the world first. See the world, man. See, that's all I'm saying.
No,
That's
you're
not.
right.
100%, 100%. Yeah, no, you bring up a good point. It does kind of make him like, damn, like how is this dude like not like in grade school still? Like he's gonna be out here, he's gonna be out here going deep off Cutter Crawford today. So like, I mean, it's crazy. But
And Buster Olney is right with that future all-star prediction. He
imagine.
might need to go from being a beat writer to a scout because I want to talk.
I mean, the thing is though, is that you watch the videos of him when he was a little kid, and he actually
Yeah,
had a good swing as a little
that's what I'm
kid. Like, it's not
saying.
even like anybody sees that and be like, "Yo, like that's a clean little hack, a
Yeah,
healthy
he
hack he has."
was real
So it's funny, but it's really awesome to see, and hopefully it turns out well. But from the positive side, there is a negative side of baseball right now that everybody's talking about, and that's the pitching injuries that are going on right now, the compiling injuries. You got injuries to Shane Bieber, Spencer Strider, Yuri Pérez. Like, I mean, the list goes on. I can sit here and name all these dudes. There's so many guys that are getting injured, and this is not just this year, but the past few years. And even guys like Jacob deGrom, who can't stay healthy for a full season. What do you guys make of this? Because there's been a lot of talk. There's been a lot of people talking about, and whether these opinions are correct or not, or whether you think these are not it or whatever, but there's been people talking about it's the pitching clock. Other people talking about that it's the way that we pitch now, the way that pitchers throw the ball, how hard they throw it, the stitches on the ball, the way that they treat minor leaguers, that they shut them down too early, they should let them go a little longer. It's a whole can of worms when it comes to where you think this stems from. But what do you guys think it comes from, and what do you think that Major League Baseball can do to kind of better it? Because I don't necessarily think anybody has the answer for it, but I think that Major League Baseball is going to have to figure out something soon. Because I mean, this you don't want any injuries ever. But when you got injuries to some of the best young pitchers in the game, it really takes a lot away from the sport, and it kind of puts fans in the spot where it's like, man, like what is going on? And I think it's finally come to it. And for people that just like us, like are in the trenches of baseball, like we know day in and day out of this game that this is not anything new, but it's something that people are bringing up now. Chris, what have you thought about this, and what do you think is the solution?
You got to go back to what pitching was before, where you're not trying to engineer, like biologically engineer guys to throw 100 or 99, because you're putting stress on joints that aren't ready for it. You know, there's some guys who, like Aroldis Chapman, are built to throw like that, and they have the mechanics that work for it. But you're trying to engineer these impossible spin rates and high velocities, and you're trying to just like when you're trying to maximize mathematically against putting the ball in play, where a sport that was built on putting the ball in play you're trying to eliminate the defense, it's not going to work. I think it was a very technologically focused approach on a biological sport that is not necessarily the same as, say, if you compare it to the other analytics-driven focus in basketball, which is to shoot more three-pointers. This is still a fairly natural motion. So even if you try to build players up to shoot harder, to be able to put the ball with more force on this angle, you're not necessarily going to take them out of the game because your shoulder is used to being able to do that. That's why you're seeing more three-pointers and longer three-point shooters in both the men's and women's side of the game. But with baseball, this is not a natural motion that your body is going to be used to for your shoulder and your elbow. I'm not only doing it just because we got people watching. I know you guys both know this. So when you try to engineer that and then also add the wrist in it, turning, trying to get more spin rates on balls, it wasn't sustainable. It was never sustainable. You have to have teams that say, okay, we are going to live with the results of finding guys who have good enough stuff in terms of your changeup and your fastball and location to be ready to field and try to throw more ground balls. If you have guys who can hit the ball harder, fine. But you've got to change it to where these guys aren't putting this much stress on their arms. I was worried that it was going to happen to relievers sooner. So my only surprise is that it's happened to more starters. But we're trying to just put in relievers like the Kansas City Royals model, where we're going to throw four guys out there who throw 100 and then have unhittable curveballs or sliders. It's something that only works for so long because these guys aren't machines. They're not just numbers on a page. And I think this goes back very far. I don't want to take up too much time. I want to let Gabe get his time in. But I think once the Moneyball era spread to big money ball clubs and they were trying to find these points of success on a spreadsheet, and then once it came time, it's like, okay, well, how do we minimize runs? Well, don't let them put the ball in play. Emphasize strikeouts. What's the best way to emphasize strikeouts? Throwing the ball past everybody. Then everything was on the clock. And now the clock's come to zero.
Y'all remember Joe Meyer, who used to pitch for the Tigers?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I remember the first time I seen him pitch, he was throwing like 100, 103 fast.
Yeah.
It was I was mesmerized by that. And I remember the oohs and ahs he would get just hearing the pop of the glove. How long did his career last? That's what killed it. We've become so obsessed with velo, 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 to where we're not focusing on the fundamental aspect of what pitching is all about. And it's what Chris said. It's about getting hitters out by any means. If you got to use ground balls to do it, so what? If you can strike out 10 guys, go do that. But you shouldn't have to go and throw 95, 98, 100 every single time to do that. You're supposed to have pitches in your arsenal where you can be able to finesse and get guys out left and right. And I think it's starting at the youth level. We talk about what Major League Baseball can do in the game. It starts at the youth level. Like, you got kids out here that's 12 years old that's just learning how to pitch, and you teaching them how to throw changeups when they barely got their fastball developed. And that's why you got kids that's young at 13, 14 opting to get TJ early. And it's like,
that kills me.
I don't get that. I don't get that at all. And you got more guys getting this TJ surgery twice now than ever before. You know, after you get it the first time, you can come back. Your success and percentage rate of you coming back is real good. But once you get it a second time, it's hard to come back from that, man. Like, I was just listening to Michael Kopech last night talk about velo, velo, and I know his pitching is predicated upon his heater with the four-seam fastball and whatnot. But what are you going to be able to do when that's not working? What happened to pinpointing your pitches and locating pitches? Like, you take the minor league pitcher of the year and Drew Thorpe, a guy that I've been tracking long before he became a Sox prospect, when he was with the Yankees. Everybody talks about how he doesn't throw 95 to 100. He only throws 88 to 92. But every time I see Drew Thorpe, he getting guys out. And he has a bevy of pitches that he can go to. That's what made Mike Mussina a Hall of Fame. That's what made Greg Maddux a Hall of Fame. And I hate to be that guy that, you know, like back in my day, but like, it's guys that have shown you the blueprint that you don't have to throw heaters or fastballs that's 100 plus and pop the gun every day just to be an effective pitcher in the league.
Yeah, and there's still guys out there, you know, even now, like as you mentioned, Drew Thorpe, like there's still guys out there, you know, Kyle Hendricks, Sonny Gray, that
Chris
have had
Bassett.
long, Chris Bassett, that have had long careers, successful careers, throwing, you know, less than 95, less than 96. So it's like the proof is right there. And I don't care what anybody tells me now, where we sit at now in 2024, in my opinion, that's more entertaining to me than throwing 100. I mean, we see so many guys throwing 100 now that it's not as entertaining as it used to be. When Aroldis Chapman came up and Aroldis Chapman, you know, was lighting up the speedometer in the All-Star game, you know, there were oohs and ahs, and now everybody does it to the point where it's not, you know, something that I'm like, you know, keen to see. Like, I'm actually more interested to see how a guy like Sonny Gray or Kyle Hendricks is going to get somebody out. So I think that's the way I see it. And I mean, I don't see it going anywhere, unfortunately, Gabe, to be honest with you, when it comes to like guys, you know, like those kids that are being taught to spin and all that, because they were talking about it. MLB Network, they had a little bit of a round table talking about it. And it's just, at the end of the day, it's how can I be higher on this list of prospects of these, of for scouts? It's how I can make it to the big leagues and all that. And it's kind of sad because at what cost are you doing it, right? At what cost are you, you know, getting Tommy John at 13 years old? And there even, I think it was Dan O'Dowd that said that in the future, it's going to be normal to get drafted as a pitcher and already have one Tommy John under your belt. Like it's just, everyone's going to be getting their second Tommy John by the time they get one in the majors. And that's just like, man, that's like, that's, it's really messed up, honestly, because growing up, like when we were younger, they were always talking about like, you know, don't throw a curveball until you're like 16 or whatever, right?
Right.
And all this.
Unless you throw curveballs.
Exactly.
And pitch and pinpoint your pitches. And I understand that these scouts are looking for velo, but that's who I would really want to speak to about this situation with the scouts. Like, when did it become all about velo? And popping the gun and making the catcher's glove pop, because that wasn't what pitching was about when I was coming up in the meet. That ain't what pitching ever been about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, I feel like when it comes to baseball, the scouts and front office executives, we getting real lazy when it comes to finding talent. We don't go to the hidden gems and seek to tap in to the unfired resources that with a little bit more coaching and development, they could be just as good, if not better, than some of these top prospects. No disrespect to them, but it's just the truth. It's just about the opportunity that you had to play the game amongst the best of the best.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're trying to, like, engineer pitchers rather than finding people who have the talent to pitch, because it's just like, well, it's cheaper. Like the Gabe, you said, it's easier. It's easier to have a guy say, hey, we think your son is tall and he's got a good arm already, but if he has Tommy John surgery, then he'll be able to throw harder. And the guy's like, cool. You have specialization, taking so many players, kids out of the comfort zone where you're playing baseball year round without too many breaks, because you're at a certain age, you can take it. You know, up until you're 20, 22, 23, you can take it because you're just young. And then you're going to start to get hurt because you've logged however many thousands of hundreds of thousands of pitches on one arm. This is, you know, this is one arm that you're doing this on. Again, with basketball, right? You dribble with both hands. You can shoot with both hands. The best can shoot with both hands. They can use both sides of their body for one thing, but pitching, you are making the same motion every day, hour after hour, on one side of your body. And you have to try and combat that. And at a certain point, you can't do it. Like, you're talking about the best guys of the best. We went back into the books, right? But I still remember going to a Sox game in, I think, 09, and Justin Verlander was pitching for the Tigers. And remember, Verlander came in and he was like a wild colt throwing that 100 whenever he could. Mm-hmm. And he was good in his first full season, but he wasn't consistent. But 3 years after that, four seasons after that, he came out and he was throwing like 94, 95. And I'm like, oh, the Sox got him. But he was locating. And they didn't touch him until they got a lucky break in the seventh inning, or I think the fifth inning maybe. And there was an error. And so it was a 1-1 game. Sox got runners on in scoring position. And Carlos Quentin came up. And this was after 2008. So Carlos Quentin was that dude right then.
Right.
And Verlander's first pitch to him was 100 on the outside corner. And I was like, this motherfucker, he's slow playing us. Because he had learned to pitch. He learned to tune it up late when he needed to. He could always do it.
No, you're right.
But he could throw 95, 96 with his body and still locate. He could go to 94 if he needed to and locate it and mix his pitches up. That's what seems to be lost when you're just like, we want these guys. And that's why I am impressed with Crochet, because even as he's throwing, you know, hitting those double digits, triple digits, he's still locating fairly well. He's still mixing his pitches. Like Gabe said, I want to see him use his changeup more. That's what we didn't really get the chance to talk about Ben Brown, but when I looked at highlight tapes of Ben Brown, he's getting guys out on that disappearing changeup. He's getting guys out up and down and in and out in the zone. And his fastball average velocity is below 95. So if he's not succeeding now at the major league level, don't try and get him to rear back and throw him as hard as he possibly can, because you're going to get one or two good seasons out of him, and then you're going to toss him on the scrap heap. And it might save teams money, but it doesn't do any good for the game. And so that's where it has to come from, teams going down to college and high school, where you have to say, we are not trying to make guys who can throw 100 for us for 3 years, and then they're going to be injured, shot to hell. We have to look for pitchers. We have to develop pitchers. And if the teams in Major League Baseball say it, then the scouts and the college coaches and the high school coaches and the parents are going to take notice, and they're going to stop doing all this crazy shit.
Yeah, we got to develop players too, though, because you got so many kids, like on the high school level, all they doing is pitching. They're not playing no other sports. They're not playing no other positions on the field. You just using him as a pitcher.
Used to run some track.
Too much. That's too much.
You can do to run track, play volleyball, play soccer, do something else.
Exactly.
Candace Parker, all-state volleyball player.
Yep.
Caitlin Clark was going to be a dynamite soccer player, and then was just like, I want to focus on basketball. All of these players, who was it? Let's go way back. Will Chamberlain, volleyball. Jim Brown, lacrosse.
Yep.
People who got to the top of their fields played other sports. Don't specialization is not good for anybody but your parents' pocketbook. I'm telling you, I will say that as a person with no kids, and people out there who watch this who have kids, don't do that. Don't do that to your kids. Let them see the earth. Let them explore.
Yeah.
If you get to the point where it's like high school or after high school, and they say to you, I just want to do this, and you have a long talk with them and say, hey, you're good with this, you're good at that, but if you want to do this, that's cool. But before that, let them explore, man. Let them try and do more than just one thing, because it's too much stress, and they just cannot. It's inordinate to say somebody can handle that level of stress for that long and not break down.
Now, you got to. Andre Iguodala was an all-state triple jumper before he became an NBA player. You know, a lot of guys don't even know that. You know, like, it's cool to be a multi-sport athlete, and I don't know what it is, but when you specifically have a player playing in just one position when he could play multiple positions and he's developing. Let that kid develop.
Yeah, and I think too is that what people don't think about, and that's in anything now that you think about it, right? Is versatility in anything. Whether, you know, we always talk about it in jobs and careers, and you know, because versatility opens up options. You know, and I think that's what people don't realize, that and they just want to, you know, oh man, just go all out on one thing. But then you go all out on one thing, doesn't work out, then where does that leave you? And it's like, well, you know, so it's one of those things that people and scouts and coaches and have to unlearn, and just try to have guys be more versatile and have, you know, but at the end of the day, it's just like, you know, unfortunately, this might be the turning point, because it's like, guys are going to have to get injured for people to realize, you know, that certain things are wrong with, you know, the way that they're developing pitchers. You know, and it sucks, because, you know, there's so many guys out there like a Spencer Strider, you know, and I feel like people haven't talked about enough the injuries that have happened to the Rays, to the Braves. Like, what's it to it? You know, how does that come about that there's so many injuries to a couple or a few teams that have a lot more? I mean, look at the guys that the, you know, guys like, you know, Kyle Wright, Michael Soroka, you know, who's on the White Sox now. It's like, you know, there's so many guys that are just in the big leagues right now that have just been, their careers are just defined by injuries. I mean, even Tyler Glasnow, granted, he got his contract, he got his payday, but I mean, we haven't seen him pitch a full season, you know, in forever, and let alone any time in his career. So, yeah, I mean, this is going to be an ongoing conversation throughout the whole season, and I think throughout the next couple of years, because there definitely has to be some kind of change with the way that, you know, people are, you know, developing pitchers and all that. So, but I think we'll leave it at that. I want to thank Gabe and Chris Pennon as well for coming on. You can see more of Gabe Wilkins on his podcast, The State of Gabe. You can see more of Chris Pennant on the CHGO Sky podcast, as well as the Skyhook podcast. And I want to thank Miles Porter as well for coming on. For everyone watching the At Bat podcast presented by War Media, thank you. Check out all our other content, like the Bears Den, as well as Slam Society, where these guys talk about WrestleMania and all that. Check that out. For Saul Rodriguez, hope everyone has a great week.